Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Jobs. My name is Francis Cirimo and my goal is to help people get the career and the salary they deserve. Today, we're with Ken from The Humble Penny. I'm such an honor. And he's also the CEO of the Financial Joy Academy. It is such a privilege to have him here and I really hope you enjoy our conversation. The question I really want to ask you right now is, considering from when you became a chartered accountant to when you became a CFO, there is no one that I know, definitely not a black man, that has done that in such a short period of time. Like, how did that happen? If someone wants to kind of do that journey and kind of do replicate some of the things that you brought, how can they do that? Maybe five tips or a couple of tips you can give those people that kind of want to, you know, move quickly within their career of finance.
Yeah. Okay. So it's important to get the timelines right.
Yeah.
So the person's watching this or listening to this has some perspective. So I became a qualified chartered accountant in December 2008, officially got chartered in summer of 2009. Right. So 2009, yeah. Let's go with that period because that's when I got my letters, you know, across the line. Right. And then I became a finance director slash CFO in 2016 around April. Okay, so
wow.
We're talking 2009-2016 is a time horizon that we're talking about. It's about 7 years.
That just saying that again sounds crazy.
Yeah.
That literally sounds insane.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that wouldn't have happened had I not had that as a goal. So let's begin. If someone listening to this and they want to achieve that sort of goal, the key things kind of determine, first of all, where you're trying to get to. So what does that promised land look like? You know, what's that position you're trying to pitch at? In my case, it was chief financial officer. I saw that as a really important position. I wanted a voice in a boardroom. I wanted to be, you know, a black man in a boardroom making decisions rather than being one of the other people, right?
Yeah.
So, I knew what I was trying to get to. So that was the first thing. And then there was the work on, the inner work on believing that I could become that person. That inner work took some time, you know, because part of what I needed to do was understand what a CFO actually did.
Yeah, 100%.
So, yeah, what would they do? What's the job, you know, description? What did they get up to? Because CFOs have people working under them. And so they're spending lots of their time doing technical work.
Yeah.
Spending their more time. They've moved on from technical to leadership ability. So
yeah.
You know, what's had to change between their technical skills and their softer skills? So
yeah.
I started to kind of figure out. There's a book I read called Winning CFOs. Okay.
Love that.
People can Google that book or go on Amazon or wherever and grab a copy.
But yeah.
I just got that book to kind of get started to understand what a CFO does. It's kind of a day in the life of a CFO. I wanted to kind of understand, like, what did these guys do beyond kind of having such a big title and being paid a really good salary?
Yeah.
What does that look like? And that book just helped me really understand the idea that a CFO is really a form of a partner to a CEO. Kind of there to help with business strategy, to deliver business strategy, as well as to run the finance function and manage the business's budget and things like that. Essentially help the business deliver on goals, as well as their CFOs wear many other hats. They might be maybe head of compliance, or some CFOs might have a bit of HR added into their remit and things like that. Okay, and also understand how the CFO differs to the chief operating officer.
Yeah.
Their different roles are. So what that then helped me to do was I understood what the role was about. And the next game plan was, who is in that role that I can speak to, that I can reach out to and figure out, like, hey man, like, you know, tell me, or, you know, if it's a woman, tell me what you get up to by being a CFO. So what I did was I used LinkedIn. I bought that, you know, the LinkedIn, I think it's the LinkedIn Pro or or something, where you can reach out to people and say, hey, look, you know, here's my career so far. You know, I've been following you for some time and I'd really love to buy you a meal or buy you a coffee.
Yeah.
If it meant, you know, at this time, nobody was talking about Zoom calls. So nobody would have offered a Zoom call, but it was a face-to-face thing. And some of these, it's interesting because I used to mentor for many years, university students. What's very interesting about people in positions of authority is that people in the positions of authority like to be asked to offer their time up. You might not think that's the case, but they love to know that they're giving something back. So in reverse psychology, if you approach somebody, make them realize that first of all, you've really thought about it.
Yeah.
That, do you know what? You're not making this bit of a pain for them. You're going to buy them a coffee, buy them a meal, but you're really there. You're not asking for a job. But you really just want to learn. You know, you really want to understand. And quite a few people said yes to me. I'd meet them in the city of London, sit down with the people I ordinarily would never ever meet.
But yeah.
They would sit down and they'd say to me, hey, okay, so this is what I do. This is what the job's about. You know, this is what it might take you to get to that role. These are the paths. And this is the other key point. Beyond reaching out to people is figuring out what is the most efficient way of getting there, i.e.
what
qualifications do I need? You know, do I need an executive education to get there?
Yeah.
Or can it just be done by experience? You know, what route should I take? In my case, I went from being a qualified chartered accountant, became a management accountant, became a financial controller, then became a finance director, then became a chief financial officer. So that's actually one pathway. It's actually a very established pathway towards becoming a CFO. Some people do it in other ways. And then there was a question of, if I want to become a CFO, what type of organization do I want to become a CFO for? Am I talking about a listed business? Or am I talking about an SME, a small and medium-sized entity?
You know,
because the smaller or medium-sized the entity, the more likely it is that you find a position that's willing to pay you what you're kind of looking for within the type of industry you're looking for. So there were various aspects to the strategy for getting there. So I knew what the roadmap looked like. So this first, then this second, then this, and the game plan then became, since I know that, how long do I need to be in each one of those roles
in order
for me to get to where I want to get to in a certain period of time?
Yeah.
And the last role I did before I became a chief financial officer was that in that role, I applied for the first time in the company's history for executive education.
Yeah.
I applied to an executive MBA at the Judge Business School at Cambridge. And that was very instrumental for me as in adding something else to my toolkit. Beyond just me being a chartered accountant and like having experience, I had exec education now. And exec education meant that I had diversified my skill set. I knew how to lead. I knew I'd been through, you know, hang around with people from all over the world who worked for Google and Amazon and what have you. And those people, because I've hung around with them, I've been through the fire of executive education, I knew how to position myself when applying.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Wow, no, this is great. This is great stuff. I don't interrupt you. Please continue. Sorry.
No. So because I was able to position myself, I then had so many things in my favor. So on paper, I had the ticks. I was a chartered accountant. I'd had experience of working in relevant companies in my industry. In my case, it was investment management. I also demonstrated a good record, you know, everywhere I worked for, people had good references for me, things like that. I'd also gone and done executive education, and it was very clear for my part. By the way, executive education is not a necessary part. But I saw that as something that I wanted to do for my own personal development, as a way of seeing myself grow beyond just growing on the job. And also, like, as a black man, not being funny, like, you know, there's a competition out there, you know, and the competition's pretty strong. And it's very easy for managers or leaders to employ people who looked like them. So I had to be really strong on paper. Yeah. Like, I had to be really, really strong in order for me to, you know, all I had to do was get into the room and then have the conversation. And then the battle really begins when you get into the room. When somebody says to you, I've looked at you on paper, I want to welcome you to have an interview, the battle then begins. Because when I went for the job interviews, the strategy had to change. And I had to employ storytelling. I had to bring in my life history to show that I've had a diversified life experience.
Wow.
I've just been to, like, you know, some school or some like some place. I've been through suffering, man. Like, yeah, I was
of course not.
For goodness sakes. Like, I've been through, like, I've seen things happen in life. And so, you know, if you're able to be that person who people look at and say, well, actually, this individual is not just plain vanilla. Like, they are quite interesting because they have had varied life experiences.
Of course.
They are more likely to favor you, right? Because people want people who've had a variety of life experiences. They know how to deal with life situations, deal with challenges and things like that. And this is why I always tell people, a lot of people feel like they have to hide their backstory. It's like, it's not very pretty. I say to people, yeah, like, are you hiding your backstory? This is like hiding all the gems. You need to use your backstory yeah, in your interviews. You know, don't be afraid, be bold. Like, be bold and tell people. But what the key is, there has to be a connection between your backstory and where you are. Because what you're really demonstrating is a transformation.
And wow.
To demonstrate that transformation, which essentially is you over time achieving something over time from who you were to who you are now, and also becoming somebody else along the way. You're demonstrating two things. You've achieved stuff, but you've also changed over time to become somebody else. If you're able to do that, then you've got all the pieces put together. You've got on paper, you look great. From experience, you look great. From a personality perspective, you look great. From a storytelling perspective, don't forget, when they write your name on the website saying, we've hired a new CFO or a new whoever, they want to be able to say fun things like, this guy was kicking a ball around in Lagos, but hey, look, he's become the new CFO of our company. They want to be able to tell a story.
Yeah, of course, of course, of course.
It's all connected. So those are the pieces that I'd recommend. Hopefully that's kind of made some sense to anyone.
No, it has. I think that, and I feel that the information that you gave, I mean, people can apply that to a number of careers and paths. Like, if that's what you want, the first thing you need to do is set yourself a goal and then follow that journey on, okay, what does that role require? You know, and kind of have that game plan. How long do I have to be in each role for me to get to this position, and what other things do I need to make sure that I look good along the way? So, no, this is amazing, and I definitely do feel it's helping quite a few people. So,
one more point, actually, quickly, is don't be afraid to talk about it as well. No matter
what,
it's important that if you're working for a company right now, that when you're doing your performance reviews, you're doing things like that, demonstrate ambition. Just say to them, like, look, my ultimate goal is to become this person. Yeah, because then a roadmap could be created for you either internally, or at least, you know, people will know that this is what this person really wants. You know, you're not just waiting to be told, okay, we think you should become a manager. No. You say to them, actually, this is my ultimate goal. You know, and if that opportunity is not available where you're working, well, at least, you know that, and your current employees might know that, because they'll know that you're quite ambitious and you're
more
likely to move on in the very near future. And that's not a bad thing, by the way.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. No, I love that. I love that. Because people try to hide their ambition, but yeah, totally. I totally agree with that and support that. With concerns to, so you've put that CFO hat aside in the professional sense, and you've taken on the CEO hat for the Humble Penny and also the Financial Joy Academy. And I really, when you kind of started this blog and you put it on Facebook and no one looked at it and no one cared. and so I guess my question to you is, similar to the other question is, what do you feel are some of the things that people need to think about if they want to embark on this journey? And what does that look like? What does that look like? Because I know you previously mentioned the 4 a.m. starts and you're not getting any sleep. So we know what that looked like because you're working a full-time job. But other people embark on this journey are thinking, I've got an idea, I can help some people, whatever it may be. Yeah. What are your thoughts around that?
So, very important. So first of all, it's very good to begin with your why. So what is your motivation for wanting to do something? So I have an XYZ analogy that I like to use. And the XYZ analogy is this. You have to be able to craft this statement, which says this, and X, Y, and Z play a role in this, which is, I want to help person X to achieve Y outcome so that Z can happen.
Okay? Yeah.
Let me explain using the humble penny. I want to help professionals and families to achieve financial independence so that they can ultimately pursue their dreams, create generational wealth, and things like that. So notice, there are three elements. There's who I'm helping, what I'm trying to help them achieve, and what it would do for their lives.
So
somebody who is a professional working and you really want to pursue a side hustle, what I like to call an impactful side hustle, essentially, that might become something one day, establishing that why is so important.
Yeah.
Because that why then leads on to two other really key ingredients, okay? The first key ingredient is commitment, okay? What do I mean by that? So we're all working, for example, and many people work their 9 to 5s or 8 to 6 or 7 to 7, whatever they're doing. But you've got to establish in your mind what the commitment level is. So for example, when we started Humble Penny, I gave myself 3 years to succeed or fail. So I said, 3rd of December 2017 to 3rd of December 2020. That's it. That's my period. What does that do?
So you're coming up to your period now.
I'm about to review my life over the last 3 years and say to myself, have I achieved what I set out to achieve in 2 months? I'm going to be doing that. But what was really interesting about that, because one of the core reasons why people fail at stuff or don't achieve core successes is because they don't commit and they don't give themselves time to succeed or fail. Because if you don't, if you give yourself that time, that time, it gives you a lot of peace in your heart because it removes all the other distractions. There are many shiny objects, but it then says, it then says to your mind, this is the thing I'm focusing on for this time period.
Yeah.
Commitment leads onto something else, which is so important. Commitment leads onto consistency.
Yeah.
That can, think about a relationship, right? You know, you got your partner. I've got my, my wife.
Yeah.
You think about that. Without having first committed, there's absolutely no way you're going to be consistent in making sure your relationship or your marriage or whatever it is, your partnership becomes a success. So you have to first commit. And so for anybody who's thinking about building something that might become, you know, quite a big thing one day in the future, establishing that why first is critical, establishing a level of commitment. And then that level of commitment then dictates the extent to which you are consistent. In my case, it was putting in those 2 hours per day.
Yeah.
It was what I knew I could find. Just like, I don't know if you've heard the saying, I heard the saying from somebody who says, finding extra time or spare time is like finding spare change. You find it kind of in nooks and crannies. You look into your sofa, you look here and there, you find 30 minutes here, you find 45 minutes there, you know. But you are so razor focused that you know that that consistency of investing those 2 hours per day leads to commitment, and commitment leads to success over the time period that you've given yourself to succeed. Even if you failed in that time period, you will learn and implement and recalibrate and improve upon yourself and your ideas to become a success in the future.
In
terms of tools, just to mention, one of the tools that really helped me on this journey a lot was the tool of time tracking. So I did an experiment where I tracked my time for 1 month. I used to complain a lot before I became the person who was more efficient, more productive. I used to complain and say, hey, I don't have a time. And a lot of people can relate to that. And so what I did was I audited my time.
Okay.
Used a timesheet app. You can get free ones on any of those app stores.
Yeah.
Download a timesheet app. And what you should do, whenever you do anything in the day, put one of the timesheet apps, put an hourly rate, like £25, whatever it is your hourly rate, £50 per hour, whatever it is, put it in, and then track your time and see what you're spending your time on. If you're watching TV, track it. If you are just chilling out, track it. If you're doing some work, track it. Write down what you're doing and so on. And over a month, I want you to then analyze what you spent your time on. What I found when I did that was I spent a lot of my time procrastinating.
Wow.
Running away from the work. Doing things that I knew were you know, keeping me away from what I really wanted to do. And the minute I had that clarity, I had to switch a few things away off from my life. For example, wasting my time watching, you know, reality TV. And certain things that I knew were just wasting a lot of my life. And what I then realized was that I had those 2 hours per day to invest in my side business. Because I saw that side business as an opportunity to offer myself a hedge from my day job, but also to give me an opportunity to explore something that I was so, so passionate about.
Wow.
And even today, what I now do, I use an app called Toggl, T-O-G-G-L.
Yeah.
The Toggl app is what I use to track my active time. Because what I want to be able to prove over time is that I do not need to swap my time for money.
Yeah.
So by that, I mean, I'm running something that generates an income whereby if I chose to take time out today, that income still comes in. If I chose to work maybe 2 hours per day, that income still comes in. And this is where wealth is created, because you've disconnected time and money.
Wow.
You can't create wealth if you're constantly swapping time and money. It just doesn't work. But if you're able to disconnect time and money, then you know you've then created assets that are doing the work.
Wow.
It's ultimately what you're aiming for. Yeah. And you wouldn't know this until you are somebody who has a complete grasp on what their time is and what they're doing with their time. And time tracking is a life hack that anybody, whether you're running a side business or whether you're in your career and exploring a side business, whatever it is, it will be life-changing for you if you made it a habit to track your time.
Wow. The advice that you're giving right now is amazing. I mean, even when it comes to just personal finances, you never know what's going in and out of your account unless you start tracking it. And this is advice that we got from you. We literally said, what is happening with our money? And we did a check and see audit of our bank accounts. And then we said, okay, now let's budget everything out, and it's been definitely beneficial for us. And so never thought about doing it with time, but I really feel that this is gonna take my life to the next level.
I tell you, Bryson, it's even more important, because people say time is money, but actually the truth is time's worth more than money. Because you can never ever get back your time. You can replicate money. Like, you can get more of it. You can do stuff and more of it will come, and you can turn it into a machine and it will grow. But you can't do the same with your time, you see. So time's worth a lot more than money. So if there's any form of tracking that needs to happen, it should be of your time. Because that's like life gold. You know, you never ever get your time back.
Yeah.
Simple compounding shows you that money works in money. Like, you get, everybody gets that. But time, it's just a special category. And the more we understand where our time is going, the more we understand who we are, actually.
Yeah.
I've heard the saying around what you know a lot about yourself by looking at what you spend your money on. I'd say you know a lot about yourself by looking at what you spend your time on.
Wow.
What do you spend your, are you reading books?
Yeah.
Are you hanging around with your kids or your spouse or where's your time going? Or are you using all your time to do your day job?
Yeah.
And like one day your employer says, look, great service, here's a nice pen. And then you get pushed.
And a pen. Thank you for your years and time.
Thank you for your years of service.
So I'm really, this is gold. At the very least, this is definitely helping me. So I'm excited. This is definitely changing my life. I really want to go into, with what you're doing as kind of how the Humble Penny has progressed. It's at a place where you're now doing this. You're CFO or CEO. Sorry, apologies. You're CEO of the Humble Penny, and this is your full-time job, but you also have the Financial Joy Academy.
Yes.
And I really want to, I know you mentioned previously that you had this large goal of helping 10,000 people. But I really want to kind of dive into that. Like, what does that look like? What does, you know, where did it start, and kind of where is it going to? Really?
Yeah, perfect. Great question. So first of all, that core mission started in 2020. Our mission when we started Humble Penny in 2017 had always just been to help people create financial joy in their lives. That's kind of our ultimate thing, financial joy, which in our minds is a step beyond financial independence, because we want people to think about money, not just about solving their own problems, but for money to help them become catalysts for helping other people solve their problems.
Yeah.
So you would have gotten your money game right, and money is sorted, but like, what does that then mean for other people?
So
we view ourselves, even in our lives right now, beyond us achieving financial independence, a couple of years ago, we now see ourselves as catalysts in helping other people. So we then start thinking to ourselves, how do we use that new positioning, a new blessing, a new new place we find ourselves? How do we use that to create something more powerful? Because many people would approach me and say, Ken, like, I saw you on YouTube, I saw you on this interview on TV, I saw you. Yeah. Hey, can I have one-to-one coaching? I said to them, oh, this is how much it costs for my time. They're like, oh, okay. That's actually really expensive. And so Mary and I thought, well, why don't we create something that meant that people still get taken on the journey practically, like hand in hand, from where they are towards them achieving financial independence, but at the cost of a takeaway.
Yeah.
Families, no matter where they are in the UK and outside the UK, can come along and get on this journey properly, not just in a superficial way, but practically being held accountable, being shown like what to be doing from a learning perspective through courses and action, what we call action plans in our world, courses and masterclasses that are specifically geared to taking action, through us offering them group coaching every 2 weeks.
Wow.
Through us creating the right environment. Because I've been through masterminds. I've got a mastermind session tonight at 7 p.m. with a bunch of people in the US. We do this every 2 weeks. We want to create that within FJA, the same FJA's Financial Academy, but it's the same conditions where you have people of the same mindset, because mindset is everything. And so if you have people like that, you find that people, your ideas and people's ideas rub off on each other. People grow because they're being held accountable, they're taking action, they're learning from each other, and therefore they progress. So Financial Joy Academy then became that platform, became a program for helping families, because Mary and I were super passionate about the family unit. You know how powerful it is for helping to create generational wealth.
Yeah.
So it's there to help families accelerate their journey towards financial independence, make fewer mistakes, to literally get to the point and say, this is what I need to do, these are the steps, here's the program to guide me every single week and month.
Wow.
I've got the opportunity to ask questions, get help, to get support, so that I'm not wasting my time. Through the Financial Joy Academy, people have learned how to invest their money, people have started their own businesses, people have paid off debt, people have started making extra money, people have gotten promotions. In fact, one person messaged the other day, and I came in saying they've gotten a 35K pay rise just by going through one of the advice we gave within our community. People feel their mindset has changed. People feel like, in fact, another lady started a business decorating bottles. She's working social care, but she now decorates bottles. And Rick Ross, the big rapper, keeps liking all her posts on Instagram when she posts them, because she keeps using some of his bottles to decorate them. That would not have started without Financial Joy Academy, without the right environment. So we're seeing like all these, we have this hashtag FJA results. We're seeing all these people seeing results in their lives. And all these results are helping them make extra money, helping them invest more, and helping them essentially accelerate that journey. So at this very moment, we're at around 200 members. We lost a number of members because of the COVID situation.
Of course.
Being made redundant and so on. But we're very excited. This has only been running for about 8 months. We started in February this year.
That's so crazy.
But honestly, like, this is, Mary and I, we're so into this. Like yesterday I had a call. In fact, my drive this morning, I had a call with one of our, we called them our dream makers. I was driving to pick my mum up. One of them needed help with her mental health. And I got on the phone with her. you know, not, you know, there's no extra charge. It's literally, hey, let's talk. Let's talk about how we do this, how you get out of this position you're in. So we see this as our calling. This is not just like, oh, some program. Like, this is, for us, this is like such a big part of our core mission. And so that's what FJA is. That's what we do at Financial Joy Academy.
This sounds so amazing, so inspiring. And I guess what type of people, like age range, what type of things, like what is the type of person that kind of comes on your course and has the biggest impact in their life?
Okay, so they tend to be a mixture of men and women.
Yeah.
They're typically professionals.
Yeah.
The women are typically professionals. The men also professionals, but they tend to be people who are in, typically in family units, although we've got people who are not in family units who are also part of what we do. We have a diverse age range, typically people in their 20s, all the way actually, we've got somebody in their 60s who's actually within the community. Then there are people from all over the world. The majority are from the UK. We've got people in from Australia, Jamaica, Nigeria, France, Portugal, Scotland. So people in different countries as well. And I've just found it to be, you know, when you just have a vision for something, Francis, but you're never quite sure what it might look like. You have some ideas, but as it starts to become real and you've created the thing and it's gathering momentum, I think for Mary and I, it's just such a powerful thing.
Yeah.
Being that place where we're like, wow, you know, like this thing's actually happening. Like people are actually seeing results. People are actually excited to be part of our community. People are really making their dreams a reality. And it's really a joy to see it happen. And a joy to see it happen in this time. You know, maybe in the 2020s, you know, most people have seen like, you know, a horrific year in many ways, but to be seeing, you know, light at the end of the tunnel for many people and hope actually, because people are dreaming big, people are, you know, making sacrifices, they're working hard and, you know, doing what's necessary for them to create a totally different life. Being able to see that for me is so powerful. And it just goes to show, like, if anyone's watching this or listening and they think that their idea is too small, they're not quite sure, I just say, look, just get started. So you're doing it for the right reasons. That's what really matters. It's about the heart. As soon as the heart is right, if you get that bit right, everything else follows. Even if you have disappointments, even if like it's too slow to start, provided the heart's there, the thing you're doing will ultimately build up. Because you sow so much love into it. And for us, we see it as a huge labor of love because we know the families, we know the people so intimately now. Like we're invested in seeing them become a success because it will help them to tell better stories to other people.
Yeah.
I'm part of this thing and this is how it's helping to change my life. So one thing we hope to do every year and we're starting to begin to work towards this is to create what we're calling the FJA Impact Report.
Yeah.
So once a year, we want to create an impact report that shows how Financial Joy Academy is helping people. And no one we know is doing this, but it's just an idea I came across. And I thought, well, actually, why don't I think about creating this? And Mary and I are going to sit down and think about how this might look. We're going to get testimonies from people, do video interviews. We're going to speak to people and think about how to present it such that other people in the very near future can kind of watch this stuff or look at it and things, you know, and see how this whole thing is helping people change their lives at the price of £1 per day. That's what it works out to be, around £1 per day. And then you think to yourself, like, some people spend a takeaway, they might buy a takeaway maybe once a month or maybe twice a month.
Yeah.
And each takeaway on average might cost, I don't know, £25 or
£30. Yeah.
And that's it, that money's gone. Whereas you've got other people who are sowing that into their lives, into their personal development, into their own growth, and into helping themselves create a future. So that's another reason why we're seeing this whole thing as such a powerful thing. And in fact, Mary thinks that the number of 10,000 is actually completely insignificant. Like in the sense that she thinks it's actually quite small.
Yeah.
We see this actually really becoming something that, you know, hopefully changes the lives of, who knows, millions one day, you know, one day. But you can only dream bigger, I guess. That's kind of what we're trying to do.
This is so good. Yeah, everybody needs to be part of this. This is so amazing. My question really, I'm shifting gears a little bit.
Yeah.
And thinking about you and the hours that you used to do What does your day look like now?
Yes.
So you just kind of, you started at 4, you got back home by what, 8, after you put the kid, all everything else that you did, and then you still had to work, and everything continued before you went to bed, just before midnight or 11 o'clock. So my question is, what does your day look like now? How's your work-life balance, as it were?
Great question. So, by the way, if you're listening to this, I'd love for you to go and watch our video on YouTube called A Day in the Life, which we put out last week. Head over to our channel at The Humble Penny and go and watch it. If you haven't, you want to see the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I'll just tell you now. So I now work between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. So in my old world, I used to leave home at 7 a.m. and I'd be back home at around, on a good day, I'd be back home around 7:30 p.m.
Yeah.
I'd be out for 12 hours.
Yeah.
And then I might get a glimpse of my kids in the evening and so on. But now I start at 9 a.m. I drop the kids off at school, finish at 3 p.m. So I do school pickup. And Mary and I juggle. She drops off, I pick up. I drop off, she picks off, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And in those 6 hours, we use that to run everything we do. YouTube, The Humble Penny, comments, Financial Joy Academy, all of it has to fit in within those 6 hours. Wow. Those 6 hours includes lunch. So I'm basically now doing 30 hours per week. That's my maximum working hours. And I refuse to work at the weekends, because in the past, I used to work Saturdays, Sundays, and my brother called me one day and said, look, man, you've got to have at least a day off. Even my mum told me the same thing.
Yeah.
So I now have at least 2 days off per week, and I also have everything from 3 p.m. onwards completely off. And that's changed my life. I cannot tell you, Francis, because I've rediscovered my fatherhood. More fathers need to be more present for their partners, children, if they've got any children, and really just enjoy life.
Yeah.
So beyond being present, actually enjoying life.
Yeah.
It's very easy to constantly be working, constantly be running around. But, money is a life. I see money as a life design tool.
Yeah.
If you think of money that way, you can use it to create a life that works for you. And had we not become financially independent ourselves in 2017 and created the option for early retirement, which I took in 2020, which included becoming mortgage free in 2019. Had we not done those things, we would not have the optionality and all these things we see today, which are helping us expand our dreams. Like a lot of the things we're doing today are just things that in the past I'd go, that sounds a bit dreamy. I'm not quite sure I could do it. But today I'm just like, oh my God, let's do it right now. Because think about it. Because I have my own time in my own hands. Financially we're okay. I'm not worrying about anyone taking our house. It's really paid off. All these things are already in place. And now it's just about dreaming and really going for it. And being bold. I always use this word bold a lot because a lot of us are too scared to do things.
Yeah.
In fact, the result you're looking for is on the other side of you doing something, having some faith, taking some action, And those ingredients are necessary, for you to develop that, that confidence, that boldness to make things happen. So for me now, my work-life balance is incredible. I go for walks with Mary. We go out, Fridays we go out for lunch in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I do exercises. I teach my kids, my native tongue now. I spend more time with them. I do reading, more writing. I have more time for myself to read my books.
Yeah.
To do my own research, to watch things I love watching on YouTube. Just stuff and beyond this COVID, we've got some fun plans, right? We're going to be hiring a car. I've said to Mary already, we're going to hire a car and just do a tour of the country.
Wow.
I've got some RVs. And one thing we're going to do is hire an RV and just tour the country. Maybe even tour Europe. But we had plans to do this actually this year, but obviously COVID hit and
of course
that hasn't happened. So, it's a very exciting time, and I'm doing that parallel to fulfilling, pursuing my passion with Mary of running The Humble Penny, of running Financial Joy. And these are just the beginnings, these two things we're doing. We'll be doing a lot more things in the future. We've got plans of running The Humble Penny Foundation as a charity. We've got plans of running The Humble Penny Kids one day, where our sons, Joshua and Elias, one day when they become teenagers, are going to run that as their own kind of thing, for their own generation. We've got, there are many plans. The thing is, every day you do something that you love and you're passionate about, you become more more bold and more excited and more opportunities are created. And almost as though you have this expansive life. Your life just keeps expanding and your possibilities expand rather than your life contracting. Do you see what I mean?
Right.
Your
capacity totally
expands the more you do things that you really love and that you're really passionate about.
Really, I've taken up a lot of your time and I really appreciate it. I got two more questions. So this is my penultimate question.
Cool.
People have gone through furlough. Some people may be redundant. Some people just don't really like their job. And this is a tough time for the economy. You just spoke about how you was made redundant and or you lost your job and it seemed like it was the best thing for you. Can you talk about, I know there's some practical tips and everything else, but then can you just talk about the mindset? Because there's one thing about practically doing things, but there's a mindset that needs to happen. Can you just talk around your mindset and what helped you get through those tough times?
Yeah, I think the thing to remember, and first of all, I just want to say that it's a very challenging time for lots of people. And we're sensitive to that. You know, we're fully aware of that. But a really important thing to bear in mind is that whoever you are, wherever you are right now, that place you are right now is a part of a journey. And it's very important to always remember that, because for a lot of us, the current circumstance and current situation can feel like all that there is.
Yeah.
Okay? And I've found that reflecting upon how I've dealt with situations in the past, how I fought many other battles and kind of surmounted them and got past them is a good way of helping me take stock of where I am today. So I've personally find journaling very useful. I also find going for walks to kind of reflect upon where I am and what I need to do next very useful. One really important question I love to ask myself is, what's the next best step that I need to make right now, given where I am today?
Yeah.
And what you find is that we often underestimate the things that we have in our hands right now. By that I mean the connections we have, the relationships we have, the people we know, the skills we have. We often underestimate them. And a lot of the time we're thinking beyond, we're looking for something more shiny.
Yeah.
So one thing I say to people is take a stock of what you have in your hands right now. What's going on in your life? Who do you know? And where are they? Where do they work? And what are they doing? And how are they getting past things? That's the first thing to do, because taking that stock will give you an idea of what the next best thing to do is.
Yeah.
Who do I need to make a phone call to? What conversation do I need to have? I find conversations, if I had to call that a second hack, as a really powerful thing, because in this time that we're all, you know, in our homes and things, the thing that's missing now is conversations, right? We're all, you know, that's why a lot of people are going through kind of mental health challenges. And so we're not talking about things and we're not opening up. So I'd also highly recommend having conversations, intentional conversations.
Of course.
About people who you maybe perhaps haven't spoken to for some time, or people who you love, or people who you would love to reach out to. They might not even be people you know, but you might want to reach out and say, look, I would just love a conversation. Just kind of understand what life looks like in your world. And perhaps that might help me with life in my own world right now. So conversations are very important. And finally, taking action is important. You know, when we're in a situation where, you gotta remember, whenever there's a downturn, it's also an opportunity for somebody else somewhere.
Yeah.
You can always ask yourself, like, how can I turn this whole thing into an opportunity? What can I do differently? If everybody's in a doom and gloom, what can I begin to do differently to start to turn this whole thing, like to turn the tide in my own situation, turn it into an opportunity? I mentioned earlier that one thing I did when I got made redundant was that I invested in LinkedIn Premium. And what that did for me was that it enabled new connections, new practical connections, that meant that I had certain conversations with people of decision-making, people who work in particular companies. And it also meant that I worked on my own personal confidence, because I was able to reach out to other people. I was able to have those conversations and gain certain insights into what I could do to move myself forward. Other things include working on your overall personal brand. What strengths do you have? What levels of learning could you be doing right now? Is there any form of upskilling you could be doing right now? How could you do that upskilling? Could you do it for free using the internet? Or could you, use some of your savings perhaps? Or could you ask for a level of funding by applying to a particular organization? There's so many things, but it all begins really by just understanding that where you are right now, whether you've been made redundant, whether you've been furloughed, is a place on a journey. Just in the same way that I remind everybody that where they are financially is a part of a money journey.
Totally.
It's a part of a journey, and that place will change depending on what your attitude is in the
moment. Yeah. So good. Okay, my last question to you is, if you could go back 10 years, what advice would you give a younger self?
I'd say embrace the internet a lot faster and the power of the internet.
Yes.
As a net producer of stuff rather than a net consumer of stuff.
Of course.
Because we're living in a world now where one individual alone could be their own company. Like, it's just hard to kind of articulate what I mean. Like, for someone listening who doesn't understand what I'm saying, it's hard to understand what I'm saying. But that's what I'm saying is you can create so much, many more possibilities.
Yeah.
And possibilities that can occur without your skin color holding you back, without your gender holding you back, without your various other hang-ups that we all have kind of hold us back.
Yeah.
So that would be the first thing. The second thing would be that I would say just do things that you really believe in.
Just
aim for them, just have a go, because it's very easy for us to stick with the status quo. The status quo is, this is the pathway that everybody follows. Well, how about just trying something else and seeing what happens?
Yeah.
So I'd say that would be my second point. And a third point would be, I'd say focus a lot in building relationships.
Yeah.
I found that one thing that's really helped me a lot on the journey so far is really sticking with what I believe my core values are. And
those
core values then guide what types of relationships that I cultivate, cultivate and develop over time. And those relationships have helped in various ways and continue to help today. Understand what your core values are a lot. Try to understand them a lot earlier. And I know this might sound a bit kind of abstract, but if you think deep down into kind of who you are and what matters to you, what does matter to you? If you had to kind of say, what are my three core values? What are those? Those things help to begin to frame what your identity kind of looks like.
Wow.
And would then begin to frame what levels of, what types of relationships you want to cultivate and what types of relationship you want out of your life, essentially.
Wow.
Well, the final point is to stay positive. I don't know anybody, Francis, who has a positive outlook on life who is not flourishing.
Yeah.
I don't know a single person who has a positive outlook on life who is not somehow things just move apart and things just happen. It's hard to kind of explain it, but it looks like things might go wrong for them, but suddenly things change and suddenly this suddenly that person calls them and suddenly that door opens and suddenly this check comes through the post. Like things just, there's something about positivity almost you become I hate to be hyper spiritual here, but it's like being that light you really stand out, and people love people who have a very positive outlook in life. Embrace a positive outlook in life, because it really does take you places, really changes the way you project yourself, and really then changes your opportunity sets. The sort of opportunities that come to you because of the type of energy that you project. Those would be what I would say to my younger self maybe 10 years ago.
This is so good. Thank you so much. I consider it to be a privilege that you decided to take the time out and have this conversation with me and us. to be honest with you, like most of the stuff is really just for me. but I'll share it with everybody else. Honestly, it's been an amazing conversation.
This has been fun, man. I learned a lot from it. I learned from these sessions. So I'm not just putting it out, I'm actually learning as well, and kind of learning to communicate as well. So this has been fun.
Thank you very much. All right, Ken, catch you later. Awesome. Take care. All right, bye.